It's not only news, it's science breakthroughs. Tomorrow's technologies. Advanced medical techniques. It's a glimpse into the future where we discuss artificial intelligence, earth and energy, enhanced humans, future society, health and medicine, space, robots and machines. Welcome to Science Bites with Joe and Craig.
Today is Thursday, February 4, 2021. At the top of our news, a new laser system to aid cancer treatment will help surgeons remove cells without damaging healthy tissue.
Experts at the University of Edinburgh are working on the system based around ultra-fast picosecond lasers that deliver energy in a series of pulses 1/1,000,000,000th of a second long. Professor Jonathan Shepard led the project and said the system has proven successful on colorectal cancers in the lab.
The scientists proved in the lab that the laser system could remove cancer cells in a way that does not damage the surrounding healthy cells. Those healthy cells were within the width of a human hair.
That's extremely close, Joe. I mean, that's like right there.
Yeah.
Professor Shepard explained they could achieve this because the laser pulses are short and there is no time for heat to burn the surrounding tissue, which happens with current surgical tools. The team of researchers are working on adapting it for the brain, head, and neck cancers.
The technology may not take long to hit the commercial market. The team is working on development of a system over the next 3 years, and after that, clinical trials can begin.
It's pretty fascinating, Joe. I mean, 1/1,000,000,000th of a second, that's just, it's so fast and so precise. That's pretty cool. But our next topic took me completely surprised when we first saw it.
Yeah, I did a double take on that one.
So there's an African clawed frog in biology. It's known as a Xenopus levius. This frog typically lives in the sub-Saharan Africa's streams and ponds, scavenging for food that it rips apart with its feet. In January of this year, researchers at the University of Vermont and Tufts University published a report that gave the amphibian a different lot in life. They harvested its embryonic skin and heart cells and then reassembled the living matter into robotic devices, transforming Xenopus into a Xenobot. Xenobots are the first robots made entirely of living materials, Joe.
I know. They're designed on a supercomputer running software that mimics the natural selection. Algorithms determine the possible useful tissue configurations for a Xenobot to perform a specific task, such as moving through fluids or carrying a payload.
The most promising designs are sculptured with tiny forceps and cauterizing irons, then set free in petri dishes, where the specks of amphibian flesh live for about a week before decomposing. There are no electronics involved in this. That is so cool. Behaviors are programmed entirely through the pulsing heart cell structural arrangement held in a matrix of rigid skin cells.
Although they can't yet do much more than crawl or swim, the researchers see great potential for them to aid in the fields like medicine and environmental repairs. They can deliver medication to the human body and clean up microplastics in the ocean.
Unlike other robots in development for the same tasks, Xenobots biodegrade when the job is completed. So these Xenobot blobs are examples of what scientists refer to as, quote, right access to life, unquote, a new scientific field.
The new science refers to many different research areas, tools, and systems aiming to remix, redesign, and optimize the living world.
Like artificial intelligence, the debate is, should the technology be feared or embraced? Yes, many things can go wrong, but great things can come from it as well. But just like cigarette smoking, climate change, and the use of radium back in the day, AI suffers the same arguments of false and real statements. Your political affiliation dictates which messages you will hear. With that in mind, it will not be long before you begin hearing claims echoed when referred to synthetic biology or xenobots.
With the new technology, there is always an ethical dilemma. If you think about it, there are neither machines or animals. They are something entirely new, something in between. So perhaps we need to redefine how to categorize living and non-living things.
That's a good point, Joe. Researchers have acknowledged that while the present generation only contains cells from the skin and heart, future generation xenobots could be composed of cells from the nervous system, blood vessels, or even reproductive parts. These additions surely call for redefining what we consider life.
After all, once these are advanced enough to have cognitive capabilities, we would need to have a framework in place that clearly defines the roles of rights. Researchers working on the first generation have fully acknowledged these ethical concerns and have called them uncharted territory.
They have invited people to participate and discuss the future implications of this new breed of bots. This way, even the general public can understand what developments are taking place. By participating in a bipartisan discussion with scientists working in this field, policymakers can draft better policies for regulating them and ensure that we do something good with this incredible technology.
Just like when Craig and I first heard of CRISPR, we said the technology would whiplash the field of science worldwide. We will hear a lot about the xenobots from this point forward. And just like CRISPR, they will change the world. Okay, it's time for a quick break now.
Our national forests. We cherish their beauty. We marvel at their majesty. We embrace their heritage. But do you know how much we depend on our national forests? For clean air, wood for our homes, and drinking water for millions of Americans. So much depends on our national forests, but now they're depending on us. Trees have been devastated by insects, disease, and fires that burn so hot, even the seeds of future forests are destroyed. The Arbor Day Foundation asks for your help in replanting our national forests, because so much depends on what we do today. So much beauty, so much life, so much that we hold dear. We must act now so that future generations can also depend on our national forests. Visit arborday.org. See what we're doing.
Welcome back. Glaciers everywhere might be melting. Only one has earned the terrifying nickname of the Doomsday Glacier.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that name because it just sounds too scary. Like a Hollywood name, I guess. Officially called the Thwaites Glacier, this massive ice nestled into Antarctica's western edge is melting at an alarming rate. A look at maps of the region's ice loss makes this absolutely clear.
The rate in which Thwaites is slipping away and adding to the sea level rise is only half the reason researchers are concerned. Behind the glacier lies a larger body of ice protected from contact with warm waters as long as Thwaites remain intact.
If Thwaites melts away, that much larger ice block will add water to our oceans as well, further driving up sea level rise. If and when this might happen is what researchers are trying to learn. Scientists know that Thwaites Glacier is very important, but still, how much and how fast sea levels increase into the decades and centuries is still uncertain. To be clear, Thwaites melting is concerning on its own. The glacier is big and disappearing faster than others in the region. If completely liquefied, Thwaites would raise sea levels by 1.5 to 3 feet.
Yeah, but you know, Craig, beach shorelines would be 3 feet shallower than they are now, and strong surges during severe weather events would reach further and deeper inland than ever before.
Yeah, it's true. It's a scary thought. So all of those million-dollar homes resting on the world's shorelines are one step closer to becoming expensive driftwood, I guess. But you know what, Joe? I have heard and I've seen some documentaries where the blue waters near ocean glaciers are so beautiful to behold. And I guess the same could be said about blue eyes. New research shows that people with blue eyes have a single common ancestor. A team at the University of Copenhagen have tracked down a genetic mutation that took place 6 to 10,000 years ago and is the cause of the eye color of all blue-eyed humans alive on the planet today. That is so cool.
Well, scientists have said that we all originally had brown eyes, but genetic mutation affecting the OCA2 gene in our chromosome resulted in a creation of a switch which literally turned off the ability to produce brown eyes.
The OCA2 gene codes for the so-called P protein, which is involved in the production of melanin, the pigment that gives color to our hair, eyes, and skin. The switch, which is located in the gene adjacent to OCA2, does not, however, turn off the gene entirely, but rather limits its action to reducing the production of melanin in the iris, effectively diluting brown eyes to blue.
You know, Greg, just think about this. The switch effect of the OCA2 is very specific. If the OCA2 gene had been completely destroyed or turned off, human beings would all be albinos.
You know, that is really scary when you think about just one protein having a mutation and having an effect. I mean, how many blue-eyed people are in the world is an awful lot.
Yeah.
That would be, that would be pretty weird. So today we talked about everything except space. And today we have news from my favorite government agency, NASA's Mars 2020 Perseverance rover mission is just 22 days from landing on the surface of Mars. The spacecraft has about 25.6 million miles remaining in its 292.5 million mile journey and is currently closing that distance at 1.6 miles per second.
Well, once at the top of the red planet's atmosphere, an action-packed 7 minutes of descent awaits, complete with the temperatures equivalent to the surface of a sun, a supersonic parachute inflation, and the first ever autonomous guided rover landing on Mars.
I'm so excited. I wish I could see this live. Maybe we can.
Yeah, you might.
Who knows? So once landed, the rover is the biggest, heaviest, cleanest, and most sophisticated six-wheeled robotic geologist ever launched into space. It will search Jezero Crater for signs of ancient life and collect samples that will eventually be returned to Earth, hopefully with no alien stuff that'll kill us all.
Jezero Crater is a perfect place to search for the signs of the ancient microbial life billions of years ago. The now bone-dry 28-mile-wide basin was home of actively forming river delta and lake filled with water.
While most of Perseverance's seven science instruments are geared toward learning more about the planet's geology and astrobiology, the mission also carries technologies more focused on future Mars exploration. The program MOXIE is a car-sized battery device in the rover's chassis, is designed to demonstrate that converting Martian carbon dioxide into oxygen is possible. Further applications of the technology could produce the vast quantities of oxygen that would be needed as a component of the rocket fuel scientists would rely on to return to Earth. And, of course, the oxygen could be used for breathing as well. Okay, it's time for a short break. We'll be right back.
What makes a rainbow bend? Where does the universe end? To know the world from A to Z.
Discover science.
The dinosaur, what's on the ocean floor, to know the world from A to Z.
Astronomy, biology, chemistry, zoology, science and technology.
It's fun, you'll see. Why is the sun so warm? What makes a winter storm? And what's a quadruped? Why is the planet Mars red? You'll find there's lots to know. Exploring as you go, to know the world from A to Z.
Discover science and technology. Astronomy, biology, chemistry, zoology, science and technology. It's fun, you'll see.
A public service message from the National...
Welcome back. For the next few weeks, our quick bites will be about evolution. When we think of human evolution, our minds wander back to millions of years it took natural selection to produce modern-day man. Recent research suggests that humans continue to evolve.
We just mentioned one change that took place, and that is some humans having blue eyes. But here is another. Historically, the gene that regulated humans' ability to digest lactose shut down as we were weaned off our mother's breast milk. But when we began domesticating cows, sheep, and goats, being able to drink milk became a nutritionally good quality, and people with the genetic mutation that allowed them to digest lactose were better able to spread their genes. And if humans love doing one thing, that is spreading their genes.
I think that is true for all animals, Greg.
Yeah, well, that's true. Anyway, the gene was first identified in 2002 in a population of northern Europeans that lived between 6,000 and 5,000 years ago. The genetic mutation for digesting milk is now carried by more than 95% of northern European descendants. In addition, a 2006 study suggests this tolerance for lactose developed again independently from the European population 3,000 years ago in East Africa. So next time you drink a glass of milk or add it to your coffee, tea, or cook with it, just think how fortunate you are to be able to digest it.
Well, that brings us to the close of another show. So you can find our shows on our website, MyScienceBite.com, and all podcast platforms.
Joe and I are grateful to you, our listeners. We'd appreciate it if you please like, share, and subscribe our podcast for other people to listen to. Thanks again for listening, and enjoy a safe and fun week. We'll be back next Thursday with another new show.